This is session number 38, being recorded on April 30th, 2007. This is side one, and we're in the Croker part of my book, the book, Fat at Communion with Bob Dobbs, and we just started reading a quote last session from the Panic Encyclopedia, which came out in 1989, and that's put up by Arthur Croker, his wife, Mary Louise Croker, and his colleague, David Cook. So this is pages 15, 16, and 17 from the Panic Encyclopedia, and I'm going to read the whole quote. Scott read some of it last week, then we got cut off, but I'm going to read the whole quote, which is about six paragraphs, and this is on page 98, 100, and 102, the top of 102 of my book, the original version. Okay, you ready?
Let's go.
Okay, what is the Panic Encyclopedia? It's a frenzied scene of post-facts for the fondo millennium, or the end of the millennium. Here, even the alphabet implodes under the twin pressures of the ecstasy of catastrophe and the anxiety of fear. From panic art, panic astronomy, panic babies, and panic shopping malls, to panic sex, panic perfect faces, and panic victims, that is the postmodern alphabet. Not then an alphabetic listing of empirical facts about the modern condition, but a post-alphabetic description of the actual dissolution of facts into the flash of thermonuclear cultural events, events in quote, in the postmodern situation. As the dark reverse and imploding side of all the modernist encyclopedias, Panic Encyclopedia begins with the fateful discovery in contemporary physics that 90% of the natural universe is missing matter, just disappeared, and no one knows where it has gone, in brackets, physicists most of all. Panic Encyclopedia argues that with the triumph of science and technology as the real language of power in postmodern culture, that 90% of contemporary society is also missing matter, just vanished, and that no one knows where it is gone, in brackets, sociologists most of all. Reading that again. Panic Encyclopedia argues that with the triumph of science and technology as the real language of power in postmodern culture, that 90% of contemporary society is also missing matter, just vanished, and that no one knows where it is gone, in brackets, sociologists most of all. Indeed, since we are probably already living in post-millennial consciousness on the other side of the year 2000, in brackets, calendar time is already too slow, Jean Baudrillard was correct when he said recently in the French newspaper Liberation that we should take a vote to jump immediately to the year 2000 and thus end the interminable and boring wait for the millennium. End of bracket. We are the first human beings to live in the dead zone of a fatal attraction between postmodern science and popular culture. More than we may suspect, panic science is now the deepest language of consumption, entertainment, politics, and information technology, just as much as the oscillating fundamillennium mood of deep euphoria and deep despair of contemporary culture is the ruling ideology of postmodern science. When I say fond of millennium, that's French, F-I-N-D-E-M-I-L-L-E-N-I-U-M, and it's in italics. Next paragraph. Between ecstasy and fear, between delirium and anxiety, between the triumph of cyberpunk and the political reality of cultural exhaustion, that is the emotional mood line of Panic Encyclopedia. Here, in fact, panic has the reverse meaning of its classical sense. In antiquity, the appearance of the god Pan meant a moment of arrest, a sudden calm, a rupture point between frenzy and reflection. Not, though, in the postmodern condition. Just like the reversal of classical kinesism or cynicism, in parentheses, philosophy from below. Okay, just like the reversal of classical kinesism, philosophy from below, into postmodern cynicism, in brackets, for the ruling elites before it, the classical meaning of panic has now disappeared into its opposite sense. Reading that again, just like the reversal of classical kinesism, philosophy from below, into postmodern cynicism for the ruling elites, so the ruling elites are now cynical, before it, the classical meaning of panic has now disappeared into its opposite sense. In the postmodern scene, panic signifies a twofold freefall, the disappearance of external standards of public conduct, when the social itself becomes a transparent field of a cynical power, and the dissolution of the internal foundations of identity, in brackets, the disappearing ego as a victory sign of postmodernism, when the self is transformed into an empty screen of an exhausted but hyper-technical culture. Panic? That is the dominant psychology of the fully technological self, living at that vanishing point where postmodern science and culture interpolate as reverse mirror images in a common power field. If the hyper-technological self is also, quote, falling without limits, unquote, this may indicate that it, too, is already a post-fact in the post-millennial alphabet, with one final, in brackets, literary existence as an entry in the Panic Encyclopedia. Consequently, the Panic Encyclopedia is all about a double complicity: postmodern science as the social physics of a fading cultural scene, and postmodern culture as the sure and certain source of the ideological theorems of contemporary science. We understand panic science as postmodern political theory in the intensive but disguised form of a theory of a, in italics, fading nature at the founding of millennium. And we read postmodern culture, from panic Hollywood, panic viral computers, and panic finance to panic urine, as explicit materializations of the catastrophic but hyper-real formulations of postmodern science at the levels of fashion, money, liquid TV, and sex. So that's a lot there.
Mm. And when was this again?
1989 it came out.
Okay. So Clinton was in office at that time?
No, this is George Bush.
George Bush. Clinton doesn't get into office until, what, 93?
Early 93.
Yeah.
So this is first year of the first George Bush's administration.
Mm-hmm. And is the information superhighway, you know, Clinton kind of ran on that idea.
Yeah.
Was that already being sort of ramped up?
No, that was more in 92, 93.
Mm-hmm.
It's more identified with Gore and Clinton.
Yeah. Because I would think that's when the panic thing really starts to happen, because that's things really speeding up under the pressure of the information superhighway.
Well, he talks about the superhighway in the book Data Trash, comes out in 94, and he talks about it being a post-information society in the Data Trash book, but he does say that here in the first paragraph, a post-alphabetic description of the actual dissolution of facts into the flash of thermonuclear cultural events in the postmodern situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, now he says in that interview I did with him on Eben's show that he sees this decade as really what the Panic Encyclopedia was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he cited the Iraq War as a panic war.
Right.
He said that when the wall went down, he wrote about that in the Panic Encyclopedia as Panic Gorbachev.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the book came out before the wall went down, probably did, but he does have a section in the book on Gorbachev, who was already panicked.
Did Gorbachev come out of the KGB?
Yeah.
And then we have George Bush, who came out of the CIA. That's kind of interesting that they were both in power at the same time.
Yeah, that was the end of the information environment, so you had to have a mystique around information, so you put in the guys who apparently know more than anybody else, the intelligence directors,
mm-hmm.
put them in power to create a charisma of, yes, there is some information that's important to know, and we're not going to tell it to you, and we're responsible with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting how, you know, God, something becomes obsolete, and now it becomes figure.
Yeah.
Information's obsolete, and now the secret information guys become figure.
Yeah. So whereas Clinton was, he had Gore as the information technologist, claiming he invented the Internet, or at least that's the rumor that was, became a meme in the media, but Clinton himself was, what? What'd you say?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, and Clinton is the obverse, complementary to Gore, by being a guy running on feeling and being considered a slick willy, a guy manipulating information or the fantasy of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of interesting that, I guess, Kennedy gets assassinated because of his charisma in the television medium, and then Clinton's a replay of, well, he's not a replay of Kennedy because he doesn't get assassinated, but he has the Kennedy charisma.
No, he's a replay of all the presidents. The bumbling Ford, the impeached Nixon, the charisma Kennedy, the Southern LBJ, the Southern Jimmy Carter, the sort of non-aristocratic roots of his youth, sort of coming from a small rural background like Jimmy Carter. So he's a mixture of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Is that always true of the president, that they're that they represent the previous presidents?
No, I see the 90s as the Android meme replay decade, and all the decades, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, were in the 90s. So Clinton was the perfect image for that because he contained aspects of all the previous presidents.
Mm-hmm.
Previous ones were unique, but
well,
his image.
The Android meme replays the previous...
No, it's the after image of the Android meme, so it includes all the information patterns from 1960 to 1990 in general.
Yeah. The 1960 to 1990 are replays of all previous...
Yeah, the Android meme is a replay of all the human technologies.
And the 90 is like a replay of the Android meme?
Yeah, it's the after image of the Android meme.
Mm.
So if you look at Croker, he's describing the Android meme here. It's ephemerality.
Mm-hmm.
He's anticipating the lack of substance in the 90s. So, let's see where he might say, just looking at what he says. So you're between ecstasy and fear, between delirium and anxiety, between the triumph of cyberpunk and the political reality of cultural exhaustion. See, cultural exhaustion. That happens by 1990. That is the emotional mood line of Panic Encyclopedia. And then he goes into the cynicism of the elites. That means they don't believe in information either. He says, in the postmodern scene, panic signifies a twofold freefall, the disappearance of external standards of public conduct when the social itself becomes a transparent field of a cynical power. So there's no social, and then the cynical power pretends there is one. And that's totally transparent what they're doing. And then the other aspect, and the dissolution of the internal foundations of identity. The disappearing ego is the victory sign of postmodernism, when the self is transformed into an empty screen of an exhausted but hyper-technical culture. See the emphasis on exhaustion?
Mm-hmm.
No one believes it anymore, and that's because the media has imploded, taken on a life of its own, which I call the Android meme, and is basically speaking to itself. And so the chemical body humans are sitting on the sidelines watching this. And seeing its emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
If the hyper-technological self is also falling without limits, this may indicate that it too is already a post-fact in the post-millennial alphabet, with one final literary existence as an entry in the Panic Encyclopedia. And then he talks in the last paragraph about a double complicity. Postmodern science is the social physics of a fading cultural scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And postmodern culture as the sure and certain source of the ideological theorems of contemporary science. So the quantum theorems of contemporary science are reflected in the postmodern culture. We understand panic science as postmodern political theory in the intensive but disguised form of a theory of a fading nature at the end of the millennium. So the real political theory is science itself. That's the real form of power, but is disguised as the theory of the fading of nature. Mm-hmm. But it's actually fading. Technology is fading. And then he says, and we read postmodern culture as explicit materializations of the catastrophic but hyper-real formulations of postmodern science at the levels of fashion, money, liquid TV, and sex. That includes panic Hollywood, panic viral computers, and panic finance to panic urine. Remember they have the urine test in the 80s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
but you still do, depending on who your
employer.
Yeah, right.
So
you're interviewing with.
Yeah. Now,
notice a lot of these corporate like chain stores, like the Walmarts or the grocery stores, the Albertsons, these big guys, they seem to require the urine test. When you get into more professional jobs, say you're interviewing for a programmer or something like that, then typically they figure you're responsible enough of a person, they're not going to ask you to do that.
Right, so the older big corporate structures are more paranoid, more insecure.
Yeah.
says here in the paragraph before what I just read, more than we may suspect, panic science is now the deepest language of consumption, entertainment, politics, and information technology, just as much as the oscillating end of the millennium, beyond the millennium mood of deep euphoria and deep despair. There's your ecstasy and fear of contemporary culture is the ruling ideology of postmodern science. So deep euphoria and deep despair is the ruling ideology of postmodern science and of the landscape of power. It's a dead zone of a fatal attraction between postmodern science and postmodern and popular culture. So you see the, on the surface, reading this, it's pretty negative sounding. Everything is exhausted, everything is disappeared, everything's post, everything is disappearing, the disappearing ego, vanishing point, reverse mirror images in a common power field. That's an interesting replay of how Joyce wrote Finnegan's Wake, because the twins in Finnegan's Wake are always reversing and becoming each other.
Right. Well, you know how you talk about, you talked about in the, a while back, like in the 90s or the 80s, the homeopathic retrieval, the Rush Limbaugh, the guy who comes in and ends up represents a whole past culture, you know, a pattern that used to be spread across an entire culture is now
demographically niche market.
Yeah. And is homeopathically compressed into the mouth of one person,
yeah,
who then represents that. Now, if we, it seems to me what's happening here is we're seeing the breakup of cultural patterns, where you have whole industries and cultures being reduced to the homeopathic level, maybe in the 80s of like the Rush Limbaugh and the Howard Stern and these kind of guys, and then, but then as we progress further, these patterns are being condensed into like everybody. I'm a homeopathic retrieval. You're a homeopath. Everybody's, so there's no cultural pattern that spans any that can be recognized as an icon, because it's all been reduced to dust, to individual particles.
Yeah, what you're saying is there's no social coherent landscape.
Yeah.
When you say culture, and this is what, you know, Baudrillard was famous for pointing that out. It's that point we just read about the sociologists, that 90% of contemporary society is missing matter, just vanished, that no one knows where it is gone, and no one knows where it is gone, sociologists most of all. And that mirrors the fact that 90% of the natural universe is missing matter. Just disappeared. No one knows where it has gone.
Right.
Physicists most of all.
But it's gone into each, it's like each, it's been absorbed by each individual instead of spanning millions of individuals and thus creating a collective pattern. It's been all absorbed, each individual has absorbed a portion of it, and now you can find a whole culture in a single person, but it's not, but it doesn't span.
No, you don't find a whole culture. You find that the media has shrunk homeopathically, so someone has access to all the previous media landscapes for themselves. And what I have in my chart in the Dobbs quadrant, which is this period,
mm-hmm,
is the homeopathic compression is Prometheus or producer mania,
mm-hmm,
is the categories in that quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus is able to feel more powerful than the media, so it goes through a decade dance. It goes through the different technological landscapes over the last 150 years, which are replayed as memes, or as you were saying, going into the individual. It's just the individual has access to all the memory signs of those previous,
right,
environments.
So instead of being a victim of a big meme that I'm living inside of, now I can replay any meme I want to at my own discretion and my,
yeah,
own, and with my own dance.
Yeah, and you can replay it in a cynical way, or an aggressive way, or a celebratory way. You have different emotional interactions with it,
mm-hmm,
different points of view, so to speak.
Right.
Now, that's what's been happening with the digital environment over the 90s into now, it's more and more geared to the individual, replaying the whole collective unconscious, so to speak, now as figure. The Croker in the 80s, and the quotes we're using here, is describing the period just before that, when the end of the analog, and the clone DSP, and the beginning of the digital, you have the mass environments have disappeared. They're on the edge of disappearing, so we're seeing their final supernova state. So they're dominating society, like the bigness of the Reagan era, and the puniness of the individual, just on the flip point into what you were describing, the power to fantasize a social by the individual, and to observe all the social memories, what McLuhan called a memory theater, that happens in the superhumanizing digital media,
mm-hmm.
what I call voluntary ESP. ESP being the collective meme that everybody thought they were part of.
Right.
And that got broken up.
Last week, I think you mentioned, or the last time we was, I think you mentioned that the death of the social was being, was a meme by the time of Charles Dickens, when every man's home was a castle.
Right.
Because in this, like you said, the castle has a moat around it, so every man and his family have a little moat around their a little. You know, they have their own. Little isolated home, and so the social collective is being broken down into a set of, you know, little castles, all isolated.
Well, that's the industrial alienation that has wiped out the social under agricultural, medieval, early print society conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the social, which was determined by the media of their era. That is wrecked, and the human doesn't even have the small village anymore.
Right.
Or the town. So now he's isolated in big cities. But
we've gone from every man has his own castle to every kid has his own Palm Pilot.
Yeah, but the intermediary phase was everybody was on welfare. That's in the radio and TV era.
Right.
50s and 60s. Everybody is in a collective. No longer asserting themselves and surviving in a capitalist situation. Now they have a cushion because money became public property. So the individualist ethos becomes a past pattern that doesn't fit what McLuhan wrote in the 40s, 60 million patsies. That's how he described American men. 60 million Dagwoods, 60 million patsies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you still have these huge lumbering memes like Christianity and Islam, and these are umbrellas that millions of people identify with, and they create huge cultural patterns, and they have explosive energies.
Okay, I would say that no meme disappears. But the reason Christianity and Islam is retrieved now is pointed to by McLuhan as the tetrad effect. What situation evokes them now and makes them more powerful than they seemed 50 years ago in the era of secular modern science? Well, we know that pollution and all that made people a little more cautious about the idea, the meme of progression and progress that science would bring in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were looking at materialist science or hardware science. They didn't know that their skepticism about the goals of hardware science were being confused by the effect of the new software media. You know, and the software media were causing the images of pollution. So things... The old 19th century hardware had a different image in the new ground of software pollution. Then the software environment disappears and people think, well, what's left? And they start talking about and retrieving these ancient religious memes. And so some people say that we're at the end of history And the end of history is also the end of civilization, which would be technological science, and the humanist enterprise, and now we have ethnic and cultural warfare. That would be a retrieval of this situation, in my terms, where we're post-android meme, post-information society,
mm-hmm.
post-technological information. So they're not, these memes become lumbering memes or become new figures due to a ground that retrieves them and gives an extra resonance to them. I mean, science is still going on. Most of our society is geared to what Coker describes as postmodern science. That's the real language of power. But in terms of the effects of the post-android meme mood, it seems that some other factor is dominant right now.
Mm-hmm.
Religious warfare.
Right.
What Samuel Huntington calls the clash of civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that the mood now? It's because everybody is paranoid. They don't have any social landscape engendered by industrial media or electronic media that seems to give them protection. At least that's for some of the cultures around the world. Meanwhile, in the advanced cultures, technologically, in North America, the younger generations are merging with the digital space because they feel they have command over it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily more religious. But that's the North American response to this global environment of Android meme exhaustion.
Yeah, the digital space is probably like a solvent. It just dissolves past cultural memes that.
The content of it, History Channel, Discovery Channel, all these channels give you images of the past. So no meme.
Well, that's the TV body, though. I mean, like you've always said, that's a conserving.
Yeah, conserving.
But when I'm talking about the digital as being a solvent, I'm talking about, you know, the kids.
Yeah, the chip body.
The kids who are living in their computers.
Yeah, the chip body. So the important point here is that no memes disappear, no previous developments disappear, but they are moved around in ratios of prominence based on the present ground. And the present ground, using the tetrad, looks at what's being extended into the new, not completely understood experience, what is seems to be obsolete, what is retrieved, and what does it flip into once overused. So the religious memes are retrieved right now under the present new environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I call that the old AP, anthropomorphic physicals retrieved inside a post-information society.
Yeah.
It's a part of the feeling that the chemical body is superior to landscapes created by industrial and electronic media.
Mm-hmm.
Which were huge, mass, one-way environments.
Right.
Orwellian, you could say. But I don't think we're in an Orwellian environment right now.
Remember that old commercial for Hertz puts you in the driver's seat where the guy comes flying down out of the sky and into the seat of his convertible? Now he's behind the steering wheel driving the car.
When was that?
Oh, that was probably back in the 60s or 70s. Hertz puts you in the driver's seat.
Right.
It's kind of like the now, you know, we're back in the driver's seat of we feel like we're pilots inside this cybernetic spaceship now because we can, you know.
Okay. How about this? The Hertz commercial puts the chemical body in the driver's seat, and that's an early aspect of the Android meme saying you're in control.
Yeah.
Right? Then we have the TV vehicle, and then you have the chip vehicle. The Android meme at this point puts you, your discarnate body, in the driver's seat
mm-hmm.
of these previous electronic landscapes, not just the mechanical automobile landscape.
Yeah.
And not just your chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the subtitle of the Paranoia magazine interview with me out now on the stand. The subtitle is Driving Our Five Bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's Driving Your Five Bodies. The Hertz rent-a-car is just talking about one body.
Right.
Now you today drive several bodies.
Yeah.
And it you and the Android Me makes you think you can do it.
Well, what are the what's the nature?
But we're talking about my stuff.
Yeah.
Stoker is talking about the end of the TV body and the beginning of the chip body, creating panic.
Right.
And he's not even talking about the body, because the body is a result of the later stages of the digital reality, which shrinks these landscapes so they become just mere barnacles of your own chemical body, or of whatever body you think you have, which I call the anthropomorphic physical, the sense of being something.
Yeah.
And
well, the barnacle is like a calcium deposit.
Yeah, it's a little stud or a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
But Croker is talking about the phase when the TV landscape, not the TV body, is being subsumed by the chip landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still using big science reference points, like quantum physics,
right,
and the big categories.
Mm-hmm.
And he's showing how the humanist interpretation or tradition around those big categories is anemic, is irrelevant, that there's some other kind of complicit, contradictory, inclusive, multi-quadrophenia mood going on in both the leaders and the consumers of the late stages of the TV landscape and the beginning of the chip landscape.
Mm-hmm. Say a little more about what you mean when you said putting the discarnate body in the driver's seat, because when I've thought about the discarnate body, I always think about the absence of a body. I think of sort of like, well, it's become sort of everywhere and nowhere. It's basically nothing, and nothing can't do anything, so you can't put nothing in the driver's seat of, you know, anything. So what were you, what did you imply when you said putting a discarnate body in the driver's seat?
I say the chip body more and more can modulate and manipulate and control the mass of information environments that were in the TV landscape. So it puts you in the driver's seat of all that cultural baggage.
You're saying that this, the chip body is also your discarnate body?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The chip, and you're discarnate once you're an electronic, and once, and the digital gradually gives you a sense of control over the content of the TV landscape.
See, when I think of the discarnate body in the, maybe I've been thinking about this wrong, but when I think of the discarnate body in the analog time, I think of the, you know, this idea everything's disappeared, so that basically the underlying...
The old categories have disappeared. You are in a new experience. You're swimming in a new element.
Yeah.
The discarnate condition
well,
is not something you could see. You can feel it.
Hmm. How do you feel it?
Well, you turn on the radio or TV.
Mm-hmm.
Instant ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
Instant engagement with the electronic pulse. And that's a discarnate state.
So can you wield your discarnate body? Can you? Do you have? Does it have a volition of some kind? Is it?
The chip body makes you think that you can talk back to the analog or TV discarnate landscape.
Right. So in the analog phase, before you can talk back, you're basically paralyzed. You're just going along for the. You're like high dose acid trip. You're just on your back experiencing, but you can't do anything.
Well, you
I don't know if that's a good example or not.
No. Here's how you do it. It's you're walking around, watching television. You got your little TV at a ball game, watching the ball game and all that, on TV while at the park. All these new possibilities of these media, but you can't translate those services back into the older chemical body, 19th century institutions.
Mm-hmm.
There's no social space for chemical bodies, politics. So politics becomes public relations and run out of TV studio in the TV era.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That begins with Eisenhower, but really gets going with Kennedy, and then Nixon comes back in 68 with a new PR program. So and what are they doing? They're just propping up the image.
And the only sense that you get to participate in that is the older medium of going and voting, you know.
On an image.
Yeah, the old visual space meme of voting. So then you feel like that's the way that you get to participate in otherwise this environment that you cannot participate in.
Well, you don't participate in the old political categories, the older industrial environments. They're rotting away. We're moving into a post-industrial society, economically speaking, which has all kinds of services and disservices. You just have to think of the Reagan era for the disaster scenario. But also, the stock market started to explode past 1,000, never stopped, and at the beginnings of globalization. The point is that the chip body takes that discarnate state, allows you to get off being flat on your back on acid, and now start pouring acid in someone else's face by creating your own videos,
mm-hmm.
your own cable information systems. And now, more extreme, you've got what's called producer-oriented media, where the consumer, the user, generates the content and
mm-hmm.
spews it back at everybody.
Right.
They're still discarnate, but they're in an aggressive mode, so to speak. They're not in a passive mode.
Yeah.
Now, television, many people thought, made everybody passive, and it made the chemical body passive, but McLuhan said everybody was activated and very involved in participating in the digital, the cerebral central nervous stimulation, which then retrieved the power of drugs as a parallel experience to the TV effect. But you were still receiving the environment. You couldn't turn it off
mm-hmm.
in terms of the content.
Yeah.
With the digital technology coming in, beginning with the instant replay and the tape recorder, the videotape recorder, you could start processing the content at your own pace.
Yeah.
Now you don't even tape the stuff.
You could process.
You now create stuff.
You could process it at your own pace on an individual level during TV landscape, because you could personally turn it on and turn it off.
Yeah.
Now, some people couldn't. Some people became fixated on the TV. They had their Pepsi, their TV dinner, and the TV, and they just, you know, it became like an addiction. And maybe they couldn't turn it off. But, you know, the average person could turn it on and turn it off. So in that respect, you could...
Right, but you we're talking about how it's translated into other media, other institutions.
Right.
And so as you move into the digital phase in the 80s, you don't have a powerful image of a social activist politician. You have a guy who just waves, an actor, President Reagan. In other words, it's a weak, anemic image reminding people of when there was a social space for the chemical body.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
We never had it. Well, we never had any demonstrations like Kent State. Well, did we in the 80s?
There were all kinds of groups trying to smuggle people out of Central America. There were all kind of anti-nuclear war movements. All kind of movements, but they couldn't get the coverage.
Yeah,
that people got in the 60s, 70s. It was all new. This collapse of the social consensus.
Yeah.
The 50s collapsed in the 60s. So it was all new to show that. And that was the effect of the satellite theater. But it was not, and that was the chemical body responding to the new discarnate state. The discarnate state is cliche by the 80s. And therefore, the issues that the chemical body would still want to retrieve, like hunger, peace, and anti-war, and human rights, they were puny and marginal because most people were nostalgically looking at the discarnate state as something to preserve. That would be the mass one-way broadcasting situation, while trying to live with the new digital space,
yeah.
which is creating a new kind of anarchy within the discarnate space.
Well, we went from...
You got that? Anarchy within the discarnate space. So the chemical body gets moved aside.
Right. We went from Kent State and the protests against Vietnam, millions of people in the street and creating a fuss with the cops and getting things heated up, to We Are the World and Live Aid.
Which were TV events.
Yeah, and then...
See, that's trying to clean up the TV landscape. But what is the underlying problem there? It's panic. And that brings us back to what Croker is describing.
Mm-hmm.
The panic of the TV bot, the TV landscape in relation to the old chemical landscape, all responding to the new chip landscape,
mm-hmm.
which become miniaturized bodies in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So my terms, chip body, chemical body, and TV body, do not apply before 1990, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
The technology that's growing these new possibilities is now going to shrink the big chemical body landscape, which is pretty anemic compared to the big TV body landscape, and it's going to shrink the TV body land, the chip body, the chip, I said TV body, let's say, it's going to shrink the chemical body, the chemical body landscape. The chemical body is now surfaces first in the 70s and 80s. That's where medicine moves into giving people just drugs and not concerned about humanistic psychological development or psychosomatic analysis of the chemical body. It's now just a marginalized thing that you program with drugs. And the TV landscape, not yet a TV body, in the 80s, and the incoming chip landscape of the 80s and early 90s, that is going to be divvied up and apparently shrunk for the discarnate participant so that they become tiny little appendages. So what happens when those environments get shrunk? What are you walking around in? You are walking around, you're like being put into the driver's seat of modulating the TV landscape, the chemical landscape, the chip landscape, and the astral landscape, and you're juggling all four from a position that is pretty hard to delineate.
Mm-hmm.
What is the position you're in? Which body is the dominant artifact in the juggling of the four bodies?
Right.
That leads to quadriphenia, so you get into the later 90s and into our decade. But Croker is talking about the effect of the chip landscape on the TV landscape and the chemical body landscape. And we can say chemical body because the chemical body is the first to become the chemical landscape is the first to be shrunk and decentralized by the TV and the chip landscapes, right? So it starts to approach a little appendage kind of apparition.
Yeah. Now, there's something I think we're leaving out of the equation here, maybe. You used to mention...
Hold your thought. To relate to what I just said, Croker says, in the postmodern scene, panic signifies a twofold freefall. Now, let's look at this, what I'm going to read, as the twofold freefall of the chemical body, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the chemical landscape. And here's what it is. The disappearance of external standards of public conduct. In other words, when people were part of a community and there were rules to follow, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The disappearance of those external measures, just what chemical bodies would agree on, when the social itself, chemical body landscape, becomes a transparent field of a syndical power. The syndical power programs the chemical body. And the other thing is the dissolution of the internal foundations of identity. The disappearing ego is a victory sign of postmodernism. That's the ego of the chemical body. When the self, or the chemical self, is transformed into an empty screen of an exhausted but hyper-technical culture, that empty screen would be a combination of the TV landscape and the new chip landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Because the TV landscape in the 50s and 60s was not an exhausted culture. It's only when the chip landscape comes in the 80s, it then makes the TV landscape
become a ghetto.
Yeah, a ghetto or anemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chip landscape becomes a ghetto when Netscape and the middle 90s, when everybody could get pretty easily access to the computer.
That's when it starts becoming a body.
Yeah, and that's when it becomes first a ghetto and a spam-driven thing with viruses.
Mm-hmm.
But by 2002, the chip landscape's become more familiar and more friendly and faster and not so bulky as it was slow and irritating in the mid-90s, so that at that point the person really feels that he can drive the chip landscape with relative lack of interference,
mm-hmm.
with ease of access.
Right.
And then you have the mobile cell phones and that. You're not even, you know, plugged into some place. You're moving around,
mm-hmm.
with these tiny machines. Mm-hmm. That's really enhancing the chip landscape to the level of a chip body,
mm-hmm.
a little appendage. But the effect of the chip landscape was to create, you know, all kinds of economic disasters all around the world for whole countries.
Mm-hmm.
You had a depression in the late 80s, early 90s, or what they call a recession. Then you have the boom, dot-com boom, and then that collapses. And you have third world countries going bankrupt and basket cases and gangs wandering around killing people in Brazil and war constantly in Africa. Look at those older. They're inside the chip landscape, but they don't have the previous industrial buffer zones that we have in North America, that buffer zone being that money was public property and everybody was in a welfare state, in a cocoon of basic social protection.
Mm-hmm.
You put pre-industrial cultures into the chip landscape, get nothing but paranoia and drug wars.
Mm.
And identity wars, as you like, for example, in Rwanda in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
They did nothing but wars in Africa for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
So now, what were you going to bring up?
Yeah, and you're saying that's because they never got industrialized, money never became public, so they jumped from, you know, the seventh...
Agricultural.
Yeah, straight into the chip body without going through the intermediate phases.
Yeah, so they just have gang warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what were you going to bring up, if you can remember?
I think I was going to say that, I guess we talk about the chip body and the TV body and so on as a way of being able to begin to even talk about the subject, but it's sort of a misnomer to talk about the chip body, the TV body, and so on, because by the time we get to the chip